We'll connect with the April 3rd, 2009 edition of the Rain Report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Greetings and salutations from the Rain Report, available as a weekly podcast from therainreport.com. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. Packet radio was the digital rage of the 80s in amateur radio. It petered out in the mid-90s, but in this era of the need for simple and reliable digital communications during heavy-duty natural and man-made emergencies, packet radio is making a remarkable comeback. The April 2009 edition of CQ Magazine boasts not one but two articles about this early digital mode thought to be a relic of the past. Think again. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, spoke with CQ's editor, Rich Moseson, W2VU, who, like so many, thought packet was dead and gone, until recently.
Several months ago, I was driving home from someplace, and I had my two-meter rig on, and I was scanning local repeaters. The radio stopped on a conversation that made me feel like I had fallen into a time warp. Here was a guy describing to another ham how to connect to a packet bulletin board, how to access information from it, how to send messages. And this was stuff that I hadn't heard in 15 years. And I, like you, I was early user of packet radio. And it was all very familiar to me, but I hadn't heard people talking about packet in 10, 15 years. So I jumped in and asked them, are you talking about regular 1200 baud VHF packet? And, oh, yes, absolutely. Turns out that they told me that it was quite active here in the metro New York area, primarily for emergency communications. I then sent an email off to our digital editor and to IRZ and asked him if he was aware of anything, since he was heavily into packet at the same time I was, and what he could find out about it. And he said, well, gee, I thought packet was dead. APRS and DX clusters. But let me look. And sure enough, we both discovered that it's still there. And at about the same time, I got this article from KB2SCS coming across my desk about two different pieces of software for packet radio in emergency communications. And basically, it emulates your typical email type software like Outlook or Eudora or something like that, so that virtually anybody will be able to figure out how to compose and send a message via packet. And it's also like the other types of software we use for email today. It will store up your messages and then log on briefly, send what you've got waiting, download what's waiting for you, and log off, so you're not tying up the bulletin board system. I was fascinated and amazed to find out that it was just plugging along there very quietly. I have to, at some point here, dig out my old TNC, plug back in, although what Don into IRZ was writing about in his column in the same issue is the fact that there's now quite a bit of stuff out there for sound cards as well, so you don't need a hardware TNC anymore to do VHF packet. There are a few companies out there that are still selling hardware TNCs, which, for those of you who haven't been around for 15 or 20 years, is an abbreviation for a terminal node controller, which essentially is a packet radio modem. It goes between your computer and your radio, just as an old-fashioned telephone modem, which most people don't know what it is anymore either, used to go between your computer and your telephone to take the text that is typed on your keyboard and convert it into signals that can be transmitted either over the telephone in the case of a regular modem or a radio in case of a packet modem, and vice versa, bringing back those signals and translating them into text on your screen. Those are still out there for dedicated packet use, probably a very economical thing to do. There is also software for your computer sound card, which emulates that. That's why nobody uses regular modems anymore either, because it all goes through the processing of the sound card. That's available sometimes free, sometimes at low cost, sometimes as a commercial program. According to Don's column, today you can buy a new TNC in some form or another from several companies, including Cantronics, MFJ, PacCom, Coastal Chipworks, TimeWave, and CMEC in Germany, for prices ranging between $50 for a kit to more than $200. So there are hardware TNCs out there, and there is software that you can use with the sound card as well.
You mentioned that there are some things that Packet does better than anything else.
Packet is a very simple, basic means of digital communications. In its simplicity is its beauty and its value, because it doesn't take a whole lot to have a working packet system. You don't need to be able to transfer huge masses of information. You need to get messages through. And the fact that it only operates at 1200 baud if you're sending text messages is really irrelevant, because you don't need high speeds for sending short messages and even longer text messages. If you're sending photos and things like that, obviously that's going to take a little longer. But with the compression technologies that are available today for photographs, you can shrink down very easily a photo to a small size that will be transmitted pretty quickly over packet. So as with anything that is dependent on a large infrastructure to support it, standard email, file transfers, things like that, all that infrastructure is subject to failure. And when all else fails, we can plug in those TNCs and be able to provide basic digital communication. They can keep working like everything else in ham radio when everything else around us doesn't work.
You're listening to CQ Magazine editor Rich Moseson, W2VU, talking about the resurrection of an early digital mode, packet radio. Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP, will conclude this interview with Rich in a moment. This is the Rain Report, being subsidized by Merle Heinlein, KB9NOH, whose bio can be found at QRZ.com. We'll be right back.
Rich, here in the Chicago area, one piece of software that a local radio club is using a lot is something called Outpost. What else is available?
Well, the most popular software for packet and in terms of a replacement for a TNC is something called AGWPE, or the AGW Packet Engine, available for download over the Internet. There's also WinPack and UIView. Okay. In fact, at the ARRL Tapper Digital Communications Conference last fall, held in Chicago, there were four separate programs on packet radio. It's another indication of the comeback that traditional packet radio is making. One of them was on the Ecom SCS and Gateway SCS programs that John Blavsky wrote about in the April issue of CQ. There was another one on a program called UDPcast, rather than sending information from one station to another, from one station to many others, and allowing each station in the group to be able to talk to all of them at once. There was another presentation on distributing weather data over AX25 packet, and yet another one on a packet network that's been set up statewide in Minnesota to help provide backup communications for emergency responders, primarily the state health department, which is very interesting. So there's quite a bit out there, and it's kind of just under the radar, but starting to come above, as seen at the conference and in the articles that we're running.
What caused packet to become old hat in the first place?
I think there were a couple of reasons that packet radio sort of went away. One is the rise and easy availability of much faster, non-amateur digital communications, primarily email and the Internet. A lot of the stuff that was done on packet became easier to do with a broadband connection or even a dial-up, although they were on a par with each other for a while. But the dial-up speeds got faster. Broadband is much faster and much more versatile in terms of sending large files and things like that. That was one thing. Another was a more social problem. If you go back to the mid-80s, when packet was really popular, one of the features on bulletin boards was that unless you marked a message as personal for the other station, then it was posted for everyone to see. And this led to a lot of really fascinating discussions, people popping in from everywhere and adding their two cents to a discussion. And it led to some really interesting, wide-ranging discussions on all sorts of different things. And it could be very, very educational. People had all sorts of expertise to offer on different things. Some people didn't like the fact that everybody was getting in on these supposedly personal messages and prevailed on the people who ran the systems to change the coding around so that everything was personal unless it was marked as a bulletin. which meant that the only things that went out to everybody were the equipment for sale notices and the Hamfest notices. All that great discussion went away. So there was less of a motivation to get on and see what was happening, because you didn't see what was happening anymore. You only saw your personal email that was coming directly to you. And there was a big drop-off in packet activity after that happened, because it got to be less interesting. It was coupled very quickly thereafter with increased speeds on landline technology. That seems to have drawn away a lot of the activity, the combination of the two.
Rich, for the packet neophyte, where do you find it on amateur radio? What part of the spectrum?
Well, the most popular place for packet radio is on 2 meters, and the traditional frequencies for it have been right around 145 megahertz, usually 145.01, 145.03, 0.05, 0.07, and 0.09. You will find APRS and DX clusters off on different frequencies. But those were the main frequencies that were in use for bulletin boards and the network backbones and or connections to the network backbones. And that's probably where you would find most of this activity that's returning today, still on those same frequencies, 145, 01, 03, 05, 07, 09.
Some of the old bulletin boards that were around then probably are still there.
They may well be. And a lot of these networks are being reconstructed. Sometimes the network operators are using internet connections to fill gaps where there's no longer a radio interface on the air to connect the network. So it's leading to a lot of new stuff. And, you know, the bulletin boards used to require a dedicated computer. I doubt that that software would require a dedicated computer today. So it just requires a computer that's on all the time. In order to host a bulletin board, you would still need a computer. TNCs didn't have enough memory to be able to do that. And there's special bulletin board software. But as far as the end user communicating, heck, you could dig out your Commodore 64 and plug it into a TNC and get on the air with it.
And hence the advantage of packet in that it requires so little computer power that even an old Commodore 64 could be utilized in an emergency communications situation.
That's right. Virtually anything can get you on the air. There are even some radios out there with basic TNCs built into them. A fair number of the Kenwood mobile and handhelds have TNCs built in so that you don't even need that. If you happen to be using one of those radios, you would need to connect to some sort of device to it to generate and read your messages, although some of the messages appear on the screen. In fact, if you've got one of those radios, you can monitor in your area to see what activity is there. You can just tune to 145.01, 03, 05, and see what shows up on your screen. Packet can do things quite well that nothing else really can do quite as well and quite as easily.
That was Rich Moseson, W2VU, editor of CQ Magazine, speaking with Rain's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, about the remarkable comeback of packet radio. You can read about packet's resurrection in the April 2009 issue of CQ. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2009 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for all of us connected with Rain, I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com. See you at Dayton, May 15th to the 17th.